There's a story of a new immigrant from the old country who came to America. His name was Moshe Schwartz. And he met up with an old friend of his from Europe. His name was Moshe Weiss. And they were talking, and Moshe Schwartz said that he's just arrived. He wants to become a citizen of the United States. But to do that, you have to go and be tested on your knowledge. And he doesn't even speak English. Yiddish was his home tongue, and that's all he spoke. And he thought, how am I going to possibly go and get tested and have knowledge of America? I don't even speak the language. So his friend, Moshe Weiss, who'd already been in America for many years, said to him, listen, it's very easy, it's very simple. The test that they give you, it's always the same questions in the exact same order. All you need to do is memorize the right lines, and you'll be able to pass the test. So Moshe says to Moshe, fine, so tell me what are they? So the first question they always ask you is, what's your name? So you have to tell them, Moshe Schwartz. Then they ask you, how many kids do you have? And you should say, 5. Then they're going to ask you, who was the first president of the United States? You have to say, George Washington. Then they'll ask you, how many states are there in the United States? So you have to answer that, 50. And then the last question they ask you is, are your parents still alive? And when they ask you that, you have to say, thank God, both. That's simple. They're the questions. That's all you're going to be asked. Just memorize those. So he went and he memorized. What's your name? Moshe Schwartz. How many kids? 5. How many? Who's the first president? George Washington. How many states? 50. Are your parents both alive? Yeah, thank God, both. He had it all memorized. It was all fine. That was all the English he needed to know. So anyway, the day comes and he stands in front of the clerk, and they start asking the questions. But unfortunately, things didn't go to plan. So the first question I asked him is, can you tell me who was the first president of the United States? He says, Moshe Schwartz. So the clerk says, okay, how many states are there in the United States? 5. Can you tell me, what's your name? George Washington. How many kids do you have? 50. So the clerk is saying, listen, something's going wrong. Either you're crazy or I'm crazy. He says, thank God, both. So this story illustrates a typical approach to relationships as well. That in talking about men and women and how they work, and how to work out our relationships. So one approach is to memorize the lines. That the bottom line is men and women speak differently, think differently, act differently, feel differently. We have totally different approaches to life. And so if you want to get on, with somebody from the opposite sex, so the only way to do it is by memorizing the right lines to say. If you just say what you think the answer is, if you respond in the way that you normally would respond, if you act amongst men the way you would act amongst your fellow women, or the other way around, you're going to get it wrong. You're going to stuff up, you're going to say the wrong thing. So what you need to do is memorize the lines. What do you need to say to a man? How to speak to a man? What are the right ways? What are the right approaches? And a man has to do the same thing. Think, what are the right lines, the right phrases, the right words that I need to use when addressing a woman? And there are many books written that give you advice and tell you, when a man says this, say that. When a woman thinks this, then you've got to say this. And if you just memorize the lines, so then you stay out of trouble. But just like Moshe Schwartz, it didn't work out for him. So it doesn't work out always for us to memorize the right lines. Because by memorizing the lines, by just thinking, this is what I have to say, this is the correct response, so we're not sensitive to the actual real needs of the other. And it could get us into trouble. You'll say the wrong line at the right time, the right line at the wrong time, and it can all be completely messed up. So really, to understand men and women, I think it's more important not just to memorize the right lines, but to actually understand the underlying differences, to actually go deeper than the surface, not just to look at the external, at the way we talk, but the reason why we talk that way. Not just to observe the differences between men and women, but to actually understand why, the why behind those differences. And this is an area that is as yet quite unexplored in the modern world. We have a lot of research that observes the differences between men and women. And a lot of fantastic books and authors and speakers that talk about those differences, which a while ago was actually forbidden to speak about. For a few decades, you weren't allowed to say that men and women were different. It was considered sexist, that the gender was considered some social construct that we made up. Finally, we've actually graduated that, and we've realized that men are men, women are women. There are real differences, innate differences. So we can at least talk about that. But what's been more spoken about is the external differences, the practical differences, without a deeper understanding of actually why we're different. What is driving us that makes a man and a woman different? And this, I believe, is where Judaism, and particularly the Kabbalistic tradition, has a lot to add to the discussion. That in understanding the underlying differences between men and women, so a psychologist or a sociologist observes what happens around them and records it. But that is an outside-in perspective, observing from the outside and understanding what's going on. Whereas the Jewish perspective is from the inside out. But the Jewish tradition and the Kabbalistic tradition actually describes male and female souls, the inner soul of male and female, the male and female energies, what they are, what defines them, and how they're different. When you understand that, when you understand the inner difference between men and women, then to understand the outer differences is very easy. It's very obvious. Instead of observing from the outside how we act differently and how we speak differently, let's look from the inside. What is the inner difference between a man and a woman? If you understand the inner difference, so then all the external differences will fit into place, will make sense. And then you won't just need to learn the right lines to say, but you'll actually understand the inner motivations of what a man is and what a woman is. So to do that, I want to expand upon something that Rabbi Gerari has touched on in previous classes, and that is the Kabbalistic description of male and female energy. That in the Kabbalah, in the Jewish mystical tradition, there's a very succinct, clear, and insightful description of what male energy is and what female energy is. There's an image that the Kabbalah uses to describe these two energies. And this image is one that will be very useful. In a line, what does it say? That the Kabbalah tells us that male energy and female energy is like a line and a circle. That the male energy is linear, is like a line. Female energy is like a circle, is circular. Not men and women, but male and female. The male energy is like a line, female energy is like a circle. If you understand that, you understand men and women. Good. Should we stop there? Is it clear yet? Let's have a look. Okay, first of all, before we speak about men and women or male and female, let's talk about a line and a circle. Going back to just the geometry of a line and a circle. What is the definition of a line?
Has a beginning and an end.
Has a beginning and an end.
Direct.
Shortest distance between two points.
Moving.
Yes, it moves from A to B.
One direction,
correct. Sorry?
Uncompromising.
I think you're jumping ahead. How many dimensions has a line?
That's true.
Two?
One.
Actually one. Actually one, it just has length. It doesn't actually have width. Even though when you draw a line, it has width. But geometrically speaking, a line is merely the distance between two points, the shortest distance between two points, and it is therefore one-dimensional. So that's what a line is. What is a circle? What defines a circle?
Never ending,
correct? There's no beginning and no end to a circle.
Continuing.
Does it have direction?
No direction.
How many dimensions does it have?
Two-dimensional,
so it actually has area, it has body. But it has no beginning and no end, no direction. It's endless, but it has body. It has area. It has two dimensions. So everything that the line has, the circle doesn't have. Everything the circle has, the line doesn't have. They're exact opposites. The line has direction, the circle doesn't. The line is finite. The circle is infinite. The line has a beginning and an end, A to B. The circle does not have a beginning or an end. The line has no body, no area. The circle does. The circle has no direction, but the line does. Everything that the circle has, the line doesn't have. Everything the line has, the circle doesn't have. Now is it clear? A line is male energy, and a circle is female energy. Let's have a look and see if this applies. If this applies to male and female down here. Now, of course, Anurag Agrahi has discussed the fact that every person has male and female within them. A man also has a female side, and a woman has a male side. Some men are quite feminine, some women are quite masculine. But there's definitely, clearly, a line and a circle. There is a definite definition of male energy and female energy. Most men will be more male, and most women will be more female. But if it's otherwise, that's okay as well. It is a generalization, and every generalization, there are exceptions to every generalization, which is itself a generalization too. No generalization is completely true, which is a generalization, right? Well, there's an exception to every rule, which if there's an exception to every rule, so then there must be an exception to that rule, which means that rule's not true.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So anyway, so let's have a look. Let's test the theory. Let's see if male energy is linear and female energy is circular. The best and most obvious place to look is in the way we communicate. There's linear communication and there's circular communication. And they're very different. Linear communication is the shortest distance from A to B. That there's a particular point I'm trying to get across in linear communication. I am the A, you are the B. I have information that you don't know and you need to know, so therefore I will share it with you. If you already know that information, there's no need to draw the line. There's no need to go from A to B. You've already got the information. If you can't know the answer to a question, then there's no need to ask it. If you already know the answer, then there's also no need to ask it. There's no need to say any word that is superfluous or extra. It's the shortest distance from A to B, the most concise and succinct way of saying it. That is linear conversation. So this is why men tend to talk very briefly. When you ask men how their day was, or what they're up to, or what they're going through, you get a very brief answer. Nothing extra, nothing unnecessary, just like good, bad, fine, or often nothing as well. You ask a man what's bothering you, he might say nothing. Nothing's bothering me. Even though it's obvious that he's upset, that he's going through some difficult time, or something must be bothering him, but his answer to you might be nothing. Nothing's bothering me. Why? Why would a man say nothing's bothering me if something really is bothering him? Doesn't want to talk about it. Why not? Why wouldn't he want to talk about it? That it's not something that you can help him with. He's bothered by something that is not something that you can really solve. He's bothered by something at work or something personal, something male. And to tell to you would be a waste of time. There's no point. Linear conversation is to get to a point, A to B. I'm not going to get to B by sharing this information with you because it's not your area. It's not your expertise. It's not your life. So therefore, why burden you? Why should he burden you with a problem that you can't help, that you can't solve? So now you're talking circular.
No.
Okay. So okay, for sure, definitely, he may have misjudged. Maybe you could help him. That's true. Maybe you could. But if he's saying nothing, it's because he thinks you can't help him. And so why burden you with it? He may be wrong. It's possible. But that's definitely his rationale.
But he's using more of his male traits to say, I have a problem. And he's not relating to his own female side to say, well, let's throw this around and see if we can't sort it out.
Correct.
And that's where relationship would break.
Correct. So that's what he's doing. And that's why does the female get upset when he says nothing?
Because he's not something sharing.
Okay, but it's something that bothers him at work. He doesn't want to burden you with it. He's actually doing it out of love and care. He doesn't want to burden you with a problem that is not your problem. So he'll leave it at work, he'll solve it himself. That's why he's not telling you. It's out of consideration. Why is she upset?
Because she wants to help him with love and care. And sharing is caring.
Ah, so because from the circle's point of view, conversation is very different. Conversation is not just to draw a line. It's not just to share information. For the line, conversation is to share information. I have something that you need to know, so I'll share it with you. If you don't need to know it, I won't share it. That's the point of conversation for a line. For a circle, that's not the point of conversation. For a circle, what's the point of conversation?
To
to resolve problems and then to develop
them. No point. The point is it. Is the conversation. Is the sharing. Is just communicating, sharing. There's not a point. It's not getting from A to B. It's not that I will give you the problem, you'll give me the solution. I'm sharing the information because you need to know this information to help you. It's not a survey. It's not a statistic. It's just sharing. That when you have a problem, you share it. Why? No point. There's not a point. It's to share it. That is the point. The conversation is the point. It's a circle. You go back to where you started from. Why am I speaking? In order to speak. Why am I sharing this with you? In order to share it with you. That's the point of the conversation. For a line, this doesn't make sense at all. What are you talking about? To share a problem in order to share a problem and not get a solution? What's the point of that? From a linear A to B perspective, that makes no sense whatsoever. But to the circle, it makes total sense. So therefore, when the woman is, something's bothering her, and the man says, what's wrong? What's bothering you? What's the response? She'll tell him. All the details. For the next 45 minutes. He will hear exactly what the problem is. Exactly what the issues are. What I was feeling. What she said. Why it bothered me. What I thought to say. What I could have said and then didn't say. And every single detail he will hear for a full 45 minutes. By the way, it may not be also, he won't necessarily hear all the things in order. That's another element of a circle, is there's no beginning and no end. It doesn't start in any particular point. So therefore, he may be thrown into the middle of the story without hearing the beginning of the story. Who said what? Who's she? You know, he doesn't. A line starts orderly, beginning to end, and you go from beginning to end. A circle has no beginning or no end. You're thrown in the middle, and the details are then, they come eventually. But she gives a full rundown of everything that she was feeling, everything she was experiencing. And what's his response?
Nothing.
When he hears all of her problems, all her issues, what does he respond with? A solution, an answer to it. When a man is listening to a woman list her issues and problems and frustrations from the day, he is sitting there formulating a response. The entire time he's trying to think, how can I answer this problem? Because he's thinking linear. That she, if she's sharing this problem, she wants a solution, right? That's why you share problems from a linear perspective. She's at A, she wants to get to B. So he's sitting there trying to formulate a solution for her. How will she get out of these problems that she has? So if she's complaining about a friend that has treated her badly and gone against her behind her back, etc., and so frustrated with her and can't stand the way she treats and blah, blah, blah. So he's there saying, why do you spend time with this person? You should drop her. She's not a good friend. You're always frustrated with her. Why don't you leave her? Just end that friendship. To which she responds,
I
can't. That's not what I asked for. This is not. I never asked for your advice. This is not. I could figure that out myself. If I wanted to end the relationship, that I could figure out myself. That's not what I was telling you. I was sharing with you my frustration. And what was he supposed to do? Instead of giving this solution and this answer, what was he supposed to do?
Agree.
Listen, agree, commiserate. Yeah. Right. So if he would be the Moshe Schwartz learning the right lines, so he should say, That would be the right line. that's very safe. That's no solution, no response, just the noise, a sound of empathy, of understanding. Say something like, that must be very frustrating. That must be really annoying. Why don't you sit down and have a cup of tea? That's what he should be doing. But he's a line, and so he doesn't know that. He thinks that he needs to come up with a response.
And
this is a source of great frustration for a man when he doesn't realize this, when he doesn't understand what the circle is doing. When the circle is going through her problems and her issues, and he is not aware of his role, what he's supposed to be doing, he doesn't know that he just needs to listen to close her circle. She's drawing a circle. She wants to include him in her problems, and he should listen to her and bounce back the feeling that she's sharing with him, to bounce it back to him. When he doesn't understand that, so he's sitting there very frustrated, because often she's presenting to him problems that he cannot solve, that he doesn't know the answer to. He doesn't know how to get out of it. That he simply doesn't know what to advise. And so therefore he is listening to these problems and his frustration is building as he's sitting there saying, how am I supposed to solve this? And at the end of her description of all her issues and problems, he may actually explode and say, well, what do you want me to do? Or like, why, you know, like he's stuck and he's feeling very frustrated. For the circle, this is very puzzling. What do you mean, what do you want? I don't want you to do anything. I just want you to listen. But he doesn't understand that until it's explained to him, until he's brought to have an understanding of why she's sharing the problems, just because she wants you to listen, because she wants you to commiserate. Until then, he thinks that she wants a solution. That's why you draw a line, A to B. So therefore, his reaction is understandable. If you think about it, if someone was coming to you for advice and asking you, I want you to solve this problem, and gave you a bunch of problems that you can't solve, you'd also be frustrated. He thinks that's what you're doing. So he needs to be told, he needs to be educated, or he needs to listen to the tape, that all she wants is listen, to commiserate, to close her circle. That's what she really wants. But she has to realize that when she's speaking as a circle, he's not hearing it as a circle, he's a line. So therefore, she has to be clear what she wants from him. If she's not clear, so then it won't work. Here also, when a line asks a question, you only ask a question when you don't know the answer. You don't ask a question when you know the answer. And you only ask a question of somebody who can know the answer, who might know the answer. Whereas a circle, because the communication is for the sake of communication, for sharing, to feel better, so then it's a totally different thing. What the man doesn't understand is that sometimes talking about something makes you feel better about it. This is something that for a line doesn't make sense. Just the talking makes you feel better. Just being heard makes you feel better. So a question, for example, a question like, do you love me? Is not a question that a line will ask. Because do you love me? Is usually the answer is, of course I love you. What do you mean? You know the answer. Why are you asking me a question and you know the answer? But a circle needs to hear it. A circle just wants to hear it. Even though I know the answer, but I want to hear it. I want you to say it. I want there to be the communication, the verbalization of facts even that I know. Whereas a line only asks a question if you don't know the answer. So what, you don't know I love you? Like it's very unsettling for a man to hear the question, do you love me? Well, you don't know, you're not sure, you need this information. But no, it's circular talking. I need to hear it. I want to hear it. Or if a circle asks, tell me everything's going to be all right. When you're going through a difficult time, is everything going to be okay? A question like that, if you from a line's perspective, is very hard to answer. Is everything going to be okay? I don't know. Maybe. Might. Maybe not. Some things will be okay. Maybe not everything will be okay. A line doesn't know the answer. I can't tell the future. But the circle doesn't want to hear the answer. The circle wants to hear reassurance. Yes, everything will be fine. It's going to be good. Don't worry about it. This type of communication, a line has to learn. And the line has to learn that sharing problems is not just to hear a solution, but it's actually to feel better. That you can actually feel better just by sharing the problem. So what a woman can teach a man is that, you know what, even though I don't know the solution to all your problems, and I cannot help you with all your issues that you have at work or in your personal life or other things that maybe are not my area, but nevertheless, why don't you try just telling me? Try just telling me and sharing with me those problems, and you'll see that having a listening ear, an empathetic listening ear, that itself will make you feel better. And the way to show him this is because that's how it happens to you. When a woman shares her problems and tells him, you don't need to give me a solution, I just want you to listen. At the end of that, she'll feel better, and he hasn't solved her issues. She's still got the same problems, they're still there, the same friend is still there, they're still going to make new problems tomorrow. But the fact that she shared it with somebody who listened, she feels better. That itself is a form of communication that he can learn. But she has to learn also that you have to sometimes speak like a line, not like a circle. That when you speak like a circle, so the line will not always know what you're talking about. For example, when a woman says, I don't want anything for my birthday. What does she mean? It means she wants something. Right? Nothing big, but something. She's maybe reminding him that it's her birthday coming up. and reminding him that he should get something. And so he's saying, I don't want anything for my birthday. That's talking like a circle. A circle talks around the point, not to the point, but around the point. That the circle wants to draw out of him the gift. But so she says, I don't want anything for her birthday. But what might happen is, he might listen. He heard her say, I don't want anything for my birthday. He wants to respect her wishes. Right? Certainly a good husband listens to her wife, to his wife. So she said, I don't want anything for my birthday. So out of respect, he might listen. And her birthday comes and she gets nothing. And she'll be furious. He's dead. It's the end for him. But she has to realize that he will hear what you say. That's what he heard. He's not a circle. A line is direct, to the point. It says exactly, this is what I need. A circle speaks around that. But he doesn't hear that all the time.
What if you tell him what you want for a birthday and he doesn't give it to you?
That's direct, and then that's obviously a different issue. That's not a male-female issue. There's something else going on there.
Once I mentioned, the week before my birthday, I said, do you need a new kettle? And he was so excited. You bet, I bought a kettle.
That's right.
I gave it to him for my birthday. That's so exciting.
That's right. Yeah, because he thought he finally caught on that you said you would need a kettle before birthday. Right. So, I think the reason why indeed would a woman say I want nothing for my birthday? Why is she saying it like that? If she wants something, why didn't she say I want something? Why would she say I don't want anything? Or if a woman is working in the house and the man comes in and he offers help, can I help you? And she says no, so he doesn't help, and then she gets upset. Why didn't you help me? You said you didn't want. Why do women speak around the point? Why don't they say what they want? Why do they say the opposite? He offered, exactly. Here he offered. So why would a woman say I don't want anything for my birthday when she does want something? Well, what's she doing? Playing games, making it hard for him. That's true. That's true. When a woman says, I don't want anything for my birthday, what is she really saying? She's saying, I want something, but I want you to think of it. I don't want to tell you that I want something for my birthday, because then it's coming from me. I want it to come from you. And for it to come from you, I have to... I hint at it, but in the opposite way. Say, I don't want anything. So therefore, when you do buy something, it was you to buy because I said I didn't want. That's what's going on beneath the surface.
Really know me?
Sorry?
Instead of asking the question, when you get it, how well do you really know me?
Right. But the problem is he doesn't know that there's this going on, this subplot is going on, that he's supposed to guess and supposed to understand and it's supposed to come from him. He doesn't realize that. And so, because he's a line, and lines need to be told to the point. So therefore, it'll be much better to just tell him straight. You know, there was a couple that spoke to me about this issue that was going on. Just one of those small issues that bother people in their relationships. He's a doctor who works on shift work, sometimes in the middle of the night, and often for an entire week, he'll be working night shift in the hospital, and getting home early in the morning, she's still asleep, and she gets up to go to work, and by the time she's coming home from work, he's out again, back at work. So sometimes an entire week will go by where they actually don't see each other. And so there was a certain some shopping that she needed done, and she couldn't do it because of her hours of work. She was working in normal hours. She couldn't get to the shop before the shop would close. Whereas he has all day. He sleeps during the day, but he has some time during the day. So she had a little list of things that she needed from this particular shop that she wanted him to go and buy. So she wrote the list, and when she came home from work, he was out already at work. So she left the list, the shopping list, by his car keys. His car keys were on the table, and she left the list by his car keys so he would see it when he goes to his car and go do the shopping for her. When she comes back from work that night, he's already out. The keys have gone. He's at work. The shopping list is still there on the table next to the keys. So she thinks, okay, so what if he missed it? So I'll have to make it a bit more obvious for him. So she took the shopping list and she blue tacked it to the back of the front door So he has to see it. As he's going out the door, he'll have to see that shopping list, and he'll be able to go out and do the shopping. So she does that. Sure enough, she comes home. It's still there, exactly where she left it, on the back of the door. So eventually, at the end of the week, they finally crossed paths. And she said, "Why didn't you do the shopping?" He said, "What shopping?" She said, "I left the shopping list for you next to your keys on the door. Like, you know, you didn't see?" She said, "Yeah, sure I saw. I thought you were putting it there so you don't forget." And he, that's what he honestly thought. The one thing she didn't do is ask him, "Please do the shopping for me. Here's the list." That's the one thing she didn't do. She hinted at it. She made it what she thought was very obvious. How more obvious is it? The shopping list is right there. But she didn't actually say it, that "I want you to do the shopping." If she would do that once, he'd be totally overjoyed to do the shopping for her. He'd be very happy to. But she just hinted at it. She didn't actually get straight to the point. A line needs to be told exactly what you want. By the way, when it comes to shopping, if you're sending a line shopping, you also have to give a very clear shopping list. With numbers of how many of each thing you want and which type you want. It has to be extremely clear. Don't just say tomatoes. You have to say 6 tomatoes if that's how many you want, or 3. You have to say exactly how many you want. Otherwise, you might get 20 tomatoes, you might get 2, you might get half a tomato. You have to know exactly what it is. If you want mushrooms, there's 3 sizes of mushrooms. There's the really big ones, there's very small ones, there's in between. There's baby bok choy and normal bok choy. There's baby spinach. You have to be very clear, because a man is a line. He needs a linear, clear list of this is what you want. Ask straight. Okay, so that might be. It might be. Well, it's by relating, trying to relate to how he works. If you think of him working as a line, as being very clear, very down the line, and very straight, and so therefore you need to work with him on his level, and so don't say things the way you'd say them to a girlfriend, that she would just understand. Right? She would just get it. You know, if you said to your girlfriend, "I don't want anything for my birthday," she understands what you mean. She gets it. If you tell a girlfriend, you know, I need shopping, you know, we have no vegetables. She knows what that means. She knows what you need. He doesn't. He needs to know exactly what you mean. So you have to speak to him on his level, the way he would understand it. It's important to understand that a man could be a very sweet, good, loving, kind man who's very understanding, who's dedicated to you, who loves you very much, who has known you for very many years. And even after all that, he cannot read your mind. He still can't read your mind. And he never will be able to. That this is something that is quite disappointing for many women to hear, because amongst women, a good friend knows you. They know you, and they know, without you saying, they know what you're going to think. They know what you're feeling. A man may never. He may never, because he's a line, he's not a circle. He doesn't have that sense. And just to accept that, and therefore tell him that this is what I want, this is exactly what I want. I think that women sometimes think that somehow lessens the relationship. If I have to tell him, so then it's not as much an expression of love or care, because I have to actually tell him. He should have known himself. It should have come from him. He should have known to do this. But because I told him to do it, so it somehow women feel that it loses the sense of oneness, of dedication. But it actually doesn't. For a man, he loves to be told, "This is what I want," directly, and to do it. And that is an expression of his love for you and his care for you, that you asked him to do it and he did it. That is actually just as good as if he would have guessed it himself, because he may never guess. Maybe not, because he may have grown up being just more and more baffled. Like, he had all these women around him, and they're so straight, I don't get them. And he may never get it.
But the same as we would want to, you know, tell him and do this so that we know how well he is.
Okay, so he can just like a woman can learn how a man works, a man can learn how a woman works. He can learn, but he has to be explained, has to be told. He has to realize that this wisdom has not been shared with everybody. Not everybody knows it, and we're told by the modern world we live in that to say that men and women are innately different is somehow sexist or wrong. And so many people just don't understand this. They don't understand that there are real inner differences. And so until it's explained to somebody, they're not going to know. They're just going to think, I don't know, you know, women can't live with them, can't live with them. You ever heard that saying?
Yeah. Can you explain to me why when I pray in the morning, I say, thank you for making me how I am, and the man says, thank you for not making me a woman? Is that not affecting the same thing?
In a way, yeah. It's a bit of a different lecture to really understand that prayer. On the simplest level, the man is thanking God that as a man he has obligations of mitzvot that a woman doesn't have. Even though the reason why a woman doesn't have those obligations is because she doesn't need them, but he's thanking God for those extra obligations. But he can't say for making me a man, because the male identity is something that has to be earned. You're not made a man. You're not born a man. You have to become a man. It's not so with a woman. A woman is born a woman, and she has to nurture and allow her femininity to continue. Masculinity is something that man has to earn. He has to become a man. So he can't say, thank you, God, for making me a man. He wasn't made a man. Well, all fetuses start off as female. After conception, all fetuses are female. At around 40 days, some become male. But even then, they're born from a woman, from a woman's body. All, both male and female babies are born from women as a part of the woman's body. They are innately connected to their mother, and they have to form a bond with the father. They have to become a boy and realize that they're not a girl, they're not going to be like mummy, they have to become a boy. And then they have to become a man, which is what bar mitzvah is about. And eventually, after becoming a man and being accepted by the men, and distancing themselves from the feminine identity, then they have to start to become in touch with their feminine side and find a woman. It's a very different path to what a woman has. A woman is born, she's conceived as a female fetus. She is gestated inside of a woman, a mother. She connects and bonds with her mother, and she continues on a female path for the entire time. Yeah, identity is much more of a struggle for a man. The male identity is much more fragile.
So a female is actually born in Australia?
her path is straight, yeah. Confusing, isn't it? So, no, in a way, it's still a line. That the man, a line means a journey from A to B. Whereas a woman, there's no journey. She doesn't have to become a woman. She doesn't have to go anywhere. She just has to develop and nurture her inner self, the self that's already there. That's much more of a circular thing.
When a baby's born, isn't it genetically then determines which direction it takes?
That only happens at 40 days after conception.
Yes.
That happens later. Yeah, that's why it says in the Talmud that if a woman conceives and she has a preference of whether she wants a boy or a girl, so for the first 40 days after conception, she can pray it should be a boy or it should be a girl. But after 40 days, you can't pray anymore. It's happened, it's decided already. So yeah, but for those 40 days, it's still up in the air.
Now
works for grandchildren as well.
Shares his problem.
Yeah.
We try to give him solution in a circle way. We try to analyze what went wrong, but the man doesn't want to hear that.
Right. Well, one thing that a man doesn't want to hear too much of is criticism. That one of the differences between men and women is that women are very externally driven. Men are very internally driven, which means that women are very good at adapting to their surroundings and at pleasing the people around them. That women are in tune to the needs of those around them and are always trying to please those around them and to be what everyone around them needs them to be. And women are very good at that, sometimes to their own detriment. That women are constantly trying to be everything for everyone, being the perfect mother, the perfect wife, the perfect daughter, the perfect friend, and doing all that for everybody else, where sometimes that can be even to their own detriment, where they're like completely exhausted by it. But it's also their strength, their power, that they're able to adapt to a situation very well. Men are internally driven, meaning that they need to be inspired to do something. Inspired. Not driven by somebody else's opinion, but innerly, with an inner inspiration, an inner motivation to do something. So when a woman criticizes a man for what he's done, or for what he's doing, that he's not good enough, or that he hasn't been there for her, he's not supporting her, he's not kind enough, he's not considerate enough for her, he's never there for her, whatever. When she says all those words of criticism, all that does is demoralize him and makes him feel useless. And if he feels useless, he's not going to be able to do anything. He's not going to be able to achieve. So therefore, he takes very badly to criticism. A woman also takes badly to criticism. It's not like women enjoy criticism either, but for a different reason. That's because women are so self-critical that anyone else adding to that criticism is already too much. But that's a different story. For a man to be criticized, it just demoralizes him, makes him feel emasculated. It makes him feel useless, and then he can't do anything. Whereas there's a nice saying that says that if you want fire, make sure you provide the wood, right? In other words, if you want your man to provide the fire, so then provide him the wood. If you want him to be more loving, more present, more giving, more sensitive, so then you have to encourage him, you have to build him up. He has to be inspired to do that. And to do that, he has to feel good about himself. He has to feel like he is the center of your world, and that you look up to him and have a lot of respect for him. Whereas if he's belittled through criticism, so then he feels useless and he can't help you. He's not going to give you.
Every relationship, if you tell him it's an idiot, we'll tell him it's an idiot.
For sure.
But it's brilliant, we'll work to be more brilliant.
Definitely. But somehow in the male female relationship, criticism. I think the woman thinks that by criticizing him, by making him feel that she's unhappy, he'll be better. The woman thinks that if I show how unhappy I am, and how dissatisfied I am, and how much there's missing, that I feel there is missing, somehow that will draw him out to make me happier, because he'll want to make me happy. So she thinks that criticism and that complaining is somehow going to turn him around. Whereas it's the exact opposite, that makes him feel useless. Right. So if she would instead praise him, give him the wood to make the fire, praise him for what he's done, because as many failings as a man has, but there are things that he's done and provided and that you take for granted. That we always think about what's missing, what we need and what we'd like. We rarely appreciate what we have and what is being provided. So first he has to feel like the things that he has provided, he's so appreciated for. And it's so wonderful, and that he does have so much that he's given and that he's able to give. He has to be praised for that. When he's praised for that, he feels inspired to give more. You've given him the wood and he will bring the fire. He will make the fire. So he has to be inspired. It's interesting.
What's the time lapse between
giving
him the phrase and giving the other?
Well, it depends how much criticism came first. after many decades of criticism, a little bit of praise is not going to do much. For sure. In every area of life, it's going to be driven. It's interesting that in a chuppah, at the traditional Jewish wedding ceremony, so the circles and the lines actually come in. That imagery comes in quite a bit, particularly at the beginning of the chuppah. There's a tradition that the bride comes and makes a circle around the groom. I've been asked by many couples when I do weddings that these days, with the, more egalitarian thinking, so can the groom also walk around the bride? You know, well, let's do it both ways. Like that'll be fair and that'll be more even. And also, later in the chuppah, there's a ring that the groom places on the bride's finger. And in Jewish tradition, the groom doesn't receive a ring at the chuppah. That's not a part of the Jewish ceremony. It's only the bride that receives a ring from the groom. So again, people say, well, maybe, you know, can we do both, an exchange of rings? And that way it'll be more equal and even. So my response is that, you know, egalitarian is very nice, but sometimes that misses the actual point of what's going on. The Jewish tradition is that the woman walks around the groom, and the groom gives the ring. It's not just because men are dominant or something like that. It's because this is true to the feminine and the masculine and what we're trying to achieve. That when the woman, who is a circle, when she walks around the groom, who is a line, he stands as a line in the middle, and she makes a circle around him. So what she's doing is she's saying that you are the center of my life, you are the center of my circle, and I'm creating a circle of love and devotion and dedication around you. I'm giving you the love, the atmosphere, the area that the circle has. The line has no dimension. The woman brings dimension, brings texture, brings a sense of presence and atmosphere to the relationship. She's creating that around him, a circle of love around him, but she's saying that you're the center of my circle. Because what a woman wants from a man more than anything else is that he'll be stable, that he'll be dependable, he'll always be there for her, he'll be the anchor in the center of her world. And so he's standing there in the middle, and he's saying that I will be here, and I'll be dedicated to you. I will hold strong, I will hold the fort. She's walking around him because what a man wants more than anything else from a woman is a sense that she can't live without him, that he's the center of her world, and that she will create a protective aura around him. He will feel safe to open himself up and to give and to be vulnerable and to be loving. He'll only feel safe to do all of that if he feels that she has made him the center of her world. When she surrounds him with love and affection and devotion and praises him and makes him feel that he's the center of the world, so then he'll be able to open up and he'll be completely dedicated to her. So she has to create the circle, and he creates the line. But then in the middle of the chuppah, the most important part of the chuppah is actually the ring being placed on the finger. And here, actually, it's a bit confusing. Here you have the man producing a ring, which is a circle, and the woman sticks out a finger, which is a line, to receive the ring. It's actually the opposite. If the man's the line and the woman's the circle, so surely it should be the other way around. Why is it this way around? Because this is the moment when they actually get married. The moment of marriage, the souls come together and become one at the moment of the ring being placed on the finger. When can a man and a woman actually become one? When can they unite? When can they be one being? Only if the man can produce a circle and the woman can produce a line. Which means that as long as he's stuck in his linear self, in his A to B, to the point being, so then he will not be able to truly relate to her. He will not be able to bring her into his life. He has to be able to produce a circle, which means an appreciation for the other way of thinking, that there's a totally different way of thinking, the circular way of thinking. He has to be able to produce that circle. Not become a circle, but produce within him an appreciation, understanding of what the circle is, that she needs to be listened to. She doesn't need solutions, she needs empathy. That she needs you to be there for her. He needs to be able to produce that in himself. And she needs to be able to produce a line, which means not that she should become a line, she should remain her circular feminine self, but she should be able to realize that he needs direct communication. He needs to be told exactly what you're feeling and what you need. Tell him exactly what your needs are and express it clearly. Don't tell him the opposite of what you mean. Tell him what you mean. And appreciate also that he is working in a linear way, so therefore if he's not communicating, sometimes that's just because he doesn't want to burden you. He doesn't want to put his problems on you. It's not out of neglect or mistrust. It's just his way of keeping his problems to himself. When she can produce the line, appreciation of how the line works, so then they can become one. That he's produced the circle, the appreciation of her, and she's produced the line, the appreciation of him. Then they can actually become one. And that's what the wedding ceremony is trying to achieve. So it means that women should be women and men should be men. We shouldn't try to create some genderless, neuter thing that is in between. Each should experience themselves in full, but have an appreciation for the way the other works. Then we can actually become one and unite. Okay, any questions? Correct.
Is that just a custom?
Yeah, it's a custom. It's not a law. It's a custom.